When you have great coaches, then after you have great coaches, you get great players. You have a great organization, and you tell them one thing. Just win, baby.
You are listening to Just Pod, Baby, a Las Vegas Raiders podcast brought to you by SilverAndBlackToday.com. And now your host, Evan Grote.
And let's go, Raider Nation. Welcome back to Just Pod Baby. That's right, it's that time of the week again, a brand new episode coming at you. I'm your host, Evan Grote. Just Pod Baby is brought to you by Silver and Black Today. Got another jam-packed show planned for you this week. Lots to get to. Mike Mack was busy this week making moves with the roster. We will discuss the transactions and how it could affect who makes the 53-man roster. Mark Davis also announced this week there will be no fans at Allegiant Stadium this year for games in 2020. Of course, we have to talk Derek Carr. We've got some Derek Carr press conference discussion. And in segment two, we will break out the crystal ball and make some training camp predictions. So sit back, relax, everyone, and enjoy the show this week. But before we dive into it, I want to welcome in my co-host again this week, back by popular demand. We had so much fun last week, we decided that we just had to run it back for you again this week. He is an NFL featured columnist for Bleacher Report. He is our senior columnist here at Silver and Black Today, and he also contributes over at Just Blog Baby, and that man is Maurice Moten. Mo, we've got a lot to get to tonight. It was another busy week full of news, but before we jump into it, how goes it, my friend?
It's going pretty well. I had to take a break from battling the car stands and haters for a bit and jump on the pod with you. I also tweeted out it's going to be an interesting podcast because we're going to dig further into the car conversation and we'll see what comes of it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I was out there fighting the good fight with you on Twitter the last couple of days, and certainly Carr was a major topic of discussion among Raider Nation this week, and we will get to that in just a moment. But Mo, I'm sure many of our listeners here on the podcast, they tuned in to the first official week of Raider Nation Radio, which, by the way, had an amazing first week, tons of great guests from them all week long. And I know that you made your debut on the show Silver and Black Today with Scott and Q. I heard the spot. I thought it was excellent. So congrats on that. And I'm really looking forward to hearing you again on there very soon.
Yeah, those guys are doing a great job. I listen to them now. As you know, as our listeners may know or may not know, we're both in New York. I'm in the city or upstate, but we're on East Coast time. So between 5 and 7 o'clock, that's my new thing now. I just have Scott and Q on, and you know, hopefully they have me on. Hopefully they have you on as well, because I know you're out there doing your thing. So I hope they also bring you on, have your voice, your opinion's voice as well.
Yeah, little quick teaser. I'm scheduled to go on the show next week on Thursday, the 13th. Awesome. So you can check me out there. But as I said, Mo, it was a busy week as far as news was concerned for the Raiders, and there was some breaking news actually just a while ago before we began recording here. So I want to get to that right at the top here. Two players have tested or were added to the COVID-19 list for the Raiders, Max Crosby and running back Rod Smith. Now, I had to do some research myself because I actually wasn't there's so many new rules and protocols with this COVID that I just wasn't quite sure, you know, what happens to a player once they go on that list. So those of you who are also are not aware, the length of the quarantine and the absence away from the team, it depends on several different circumstances. First, the player can go on the list for a couple different reasons. One is a positive test themselves, and secondly, they could go on the list if they were exposed to someone else that has tested positive. And then, you know, they treat players differently who may be showing symptoms and players who maybe are asymptomatic. So if a player, for example, tests positive without symptoms, they can return to the team in as little as 5 days, as long as there's two negative tests separated by a 24-hour period. And then for players who are showing symptoms, those players aren't cleared until 10 days have passed since the first symptom and 72 hours have passed since the last symptoms occurred. So I just wanted to make sure I put that out there for those of you who, again, may not be up to date with all your protocols and whatnot. Now, Mo, Vinny Bonsignor, actually, just before I started recording, I was listening to his show, and he was talking about how, in fact, he did confirm that in Crosby's case, he did test positive, but he was not able to confirm whether he is actually showing symptoms or not. So it looks like Crosby could go on the shelf for at least 5 days. Now, you don't want to see anyone go on this COVID list and I'm not making light of the virus at all because we know how serious it can be. But to me, I guess if it was ever going to happen at all at any point, I think now is a better time than, let's say, once the season gets underway.
Yeah, absolutely. I said this before, and I say this on a lot of other shows, that all teams, I believe, are going to have some positive tests before and during the season. So this is something we have to deal with, or the players have to deal with, and teams have to deal with, and be prepared for it. So this is why I think this year more than any, I mean, depth is always important for a good roster, but I think this year it's even more important because, again, you're going to have positive tests, players coming on and off the roster, onto the COVID-19 list. Now, with Crosby's case, and you say it's better now than later on, and I expect that if he has a regular recovery that he'll be back well before the season to get himself back into shape. So I wouldn't worry too much about it. Of course, we don't know the specifics of what's going on with his condition, but you would hope that he's back in action pretty soon. And again, before the season, so he can get himself back into shape. And he's a major part of that defensive line, so you need him to be healthy to bolster that pass rush.
Yeah, I agree with you. And personally, you know, I'm obviously concerned for both Crosby and Smith about their health, you know, and I hope they can get back to health quickly. And of course, you know, but from a football standpoint, you know, I'm not going to hit the panic button here. I'm not really concerned about a guy like Crosby making up for lost time that he's going to have here in the next few days. We know how hard of a worker he is, and it's a small setback, yeah. But, you know, of course, I would be much more concerned if it was a player like perhaps one of the rookies, or a guy like Corey Littleton, who is new to the team and needs every rep they can get out there with their new teammates as they try to learn this new system and try to soak in as much knowledge as possible.
The other thing is, if you remember Crosby last year during the preseason, I believe he broke his hand. This is the same guy who broke his hand during the preseason or had a fracture of some sort and still had a pretty good season, 10 sacks. So I'm not, as you said, I'm not worried about Crosby at all. I think he'll be up to speed before the season, and I think you'll see him in tip-top shape.
Yeah, and a little side note here, I did, and I retweeted it, Tom Pelissero with the NFL Network, he tweeted this morning that the NFL Players Association released information that said 56 players have tested positive. Tested positive. 56 players, and since players have began reporting to training camp, that's about 2% of the 2,600 players on active rosters. So, you know, despite the positive tests here with the Raiders, it appears league wide at least, the virus is relatively in check. So, you know, we do wish Crosby and Smith a speedy recovery, and we hope to see both of those guys back with the team very soon. Now, in other news, Mo, this week the veterans reported to camp, and they joined up with the rookies to begin the strength and conditioning phase of camp, which is now underway. And speaking of conditioning, another big storyline this week, it sounds like PJ Hall did not exactly report to camp in the best shape, even after he was, you know, put on notice by his general manager a couple months ago, and head coach John Gruden has talked about him recently as well. Now, what many of us believed could happen was confirmed earlier this week when the Raiders did decide to cut ties with the former second round pick PJ Hall. And it was really a bizarre situation how it all went down. Reports came out early this week that he was going to be cut, and then hours later we heard that he was being traded to the Vikings for a conditional seventh-round pick. And I think everyone was like, wow, that's great news that they could pick up anything for a guy they were going to cut. And then the following day, we find out he failed his physical, and the trade was voided, sending him back to the Raiders, only to then be cut by the Raiders. So really just kind of a, you know, talk about hitting rock bottom. It was a really bad moment for the career of Hall, and really makes you wonder how bad of shape was he in, you know. But Mo, again, this is not a complete shocker to many of us, but Hall you know, he was selected just a couple years ago in round two, 2018 to be exact. He's 24 years old. He's entering his third year in the league. And much has been made about new defensive line coach Rod Marinelli and the impact that he is expected to have on some of these young guys, even with the concerns about Hall's weight and you know, being out of shape. Do you think maybe they pulled the plug on him a bit early, or were they right to cut him after only two seasons?
Absolutely justifying cutting him. I would ask the question the other way around. Did Hall give up on the Raiders too soon? I mean, you said it. This guy was on the chopping block. Mayock said it during the scouting combine that he's got to put in more effort with Rod Marinelli because he's not going to put up with half, you know, half efforts. And then Gruden comes in and he talks about Hall being overweight, reporting to the team overweight last year. And as soon as the veterans report, they trade him, or they were going to cut him. And then they found a trade partner in the Vikings who failed the physical, as you just said, and then they cut him. So that tells you all you need to know about Hall's motivation. So if a guy doesn't want to make the most of his opportunity, you can't make the most of it. So you have to cut ties. And this is not on the Raiders giving up too early. This is about Hall just not putting enough effort into his craft. This is his job. This is his career. And a guy who's a second round pick, you would think being an underdog coming out of San Houston State, that he would put in the work to show, like, look, I could have gone to one of these powerhouse schools and been a first round pick. And, you know, everyone doubted me and I overcame some expectations and, you know, adversity or what have you, but he just didn't seem motivated to play the game. And if you hear Mayock talk and you hear Gruden talk, Gruden always says the Raiders are going to lead the league in effort. Mayock also talks about bringing guys who love the game, love football, and Hall just didn't love it enough. And when you don't love it enough, guys can see it, coaches can see it, the GM can see it, and you just, again, you have to cut ties.
Yeah, no doubt. He clearly doesn't fit into at least the vision that Mayock and Gruden have for this new Raiders team here. And obviously they were unhappy with his effort and consistency. And, you know, they told him months ago he needed to come in shape, and he didn't do that. And you've also pointed out Gruden's comments about his weight. You know, Hall, when you look back on it, he just really struggled to find a role with the team. I went back and looked. He did make 12 starts. I didn't realize he made that many starts, but he did. He actually started 12 games last year, but really just a non-factor throughout his tenure with the Raiders. Only a sack and a half, 8 tackles for loss in 30 games, and those are things that he did really well at the college level. He was disruptive in the backfield, making plays behind the line of scrimmage and blocking kicks and those kind of things. But it didn't translate to the pros for him, and maybe it's work ethic. You know, who knows. But I do think there were some other factors that made it easier to say goodbye to Hall. And one of those factors that I think worked against Hall was what we're going through here with this pandemic, and the fact that rosters are being trimmed to 80 rather than the traditional 90-man rosters that we're accustomed to seeing this time of the year. And also, I think another big factor that really made him expendable was when Rod Marinelli was brought in, and when he came in, he brought along two of his former guys in Malik Collins and Daniel Ross. And, you know, those are guys that the coach is familiar with and they have a track record with. So I do think that played a role as well. But at the end of the day, as you said, Hall just did not play up to the expectations.
Yeah, and you got to understand, once Marinelli comes in and they sign Ross and they bring in and they sign Malik Collins, PJ Hall had to know. Like, we heard the GM and Gruden talk publicly about PJ Hall. And usually, and I follow these stories a lot, usually once we hear it, the player has already heard it long before we hear it. So usually that news gets to the player that he needs to step it up long before it goes public. And then we're thinking, okay, what's going on with PJ Hall? So he had to know way beforehand. Like, we're just finding out that he reported to camp overweight, when Gruden said in that press conference last week. So obviously Paul knew it and the coaches knew it. So he already knew he had to step it up. And you talked about not knowing that he even started 12 games. That's indicative of his impact on that defensive line. Of course, he had some flashes and he's pretty good. He could be pretty good against the run, but he just never reached his potential as a second round pick. And I know we can judge him on being a second round pick, but if you look at the player itself, I just never saw it with PJ Hall once he got into the league. I know there were some supporters that saying that he could be pretty good next to Hurst. And Hurst has been average. He's had some flashes, but he's at least had way more flashes, in my opinion, and PJ Hall has had, and now we know why, because PJ Hall just didn't come to work prepared.
Yeah, and you know, talking a little bit about more about that 2018 class, I'm kind of going to shift gears from PJ Hall now. I kind of want to touch on two other players from that 2018 draft class that were selected along with Hall that year, and I want to talk about Arden Key and Maurice Hurst. And these are guys that, you know, many believe could be on the hot seat as well. Maybe not to the extent of PJ Hall is this season, but certainly next season they could find themselves in a similar situation. Now, Arden Key was a third round selection, and I don't think he's been the guy that Gruden envisioned him being when he was selected. And I'll give him a break for the rookie year. He was kind of thrown in there maybe before he was ready. Let's not forget he was drafted with the idea that he would be a rotational pass rusher to kind of compliment Khalil Mack and Bruce Irvin at the time, and when they traded Mack away, that kind of forced him in there maybe before he was ready, and then he had some injuries, of course, last season. And then when we talk about Mo Hurst, we're talking about a guy who many believed going into the draft process was a first-round talent. I mean, he was being mocked in first rounds. And if it wasn't for him being flagged with a heart condition prior to the combine, that might have happened. And, you know, and he's had some good moments, but overall, he really hasn't lived up to that hype either. So, Mo, what I want to talk about here is with the emergence of guys like Max Crosby and the additions of Carl Nassib, and we talked about Malik Collins, you could look at these moves in two different ways. One is, of course, they want to add to the depth along the line and some competition. That's never a bad thing. Or you could say, you know, the coaches are not sold on guys like Arden Key and Maurice Hurst, and maybe they are in the team's long-term plans.
Yeah, I would be more concerned with Arden Key than Maurice Hurst. Maurice Hurst, by the way, was the Raiders sack leader in 2018, that first year after Khalil Mack was traded with four sacks. I know he only had four sacks, but again, I felt like Maurice Hurst in a rotation role as a three technique, I think he's pretty solid. I think with Rod Marinelli being there, I think he's going to be that much better. Again, I would worry more about Arden Key only because, as we know, Gruden does not have a lot of patience for guys who are either out of shape, PJ Hall, or they're hurt. And Arden Key, as we know, broke his foot and midway through last year. Didn't finish the year. He had two sacks before he got hurt. Now, who knows what he would have finished with? Maybe he could have finished with maybe four or five or six sacks if he had played the whole season. But now he seems like he has a fire under him. I know Tashaun Reed of The Athletic did a feature on him. And basically he's saying, you know, I'm going to do things my way. You know, the coaches and everyone wanted me to bulk up and said I was too small. Well, he's been taking boxing lessons and he's been working out, and he's probably at a decent weight. He's probably not huge, of course, but I think he's going to try to, in his own words, he's going to try to do things his way, the Arden Key way, and the way he felt like he was successful going back to his early time at LSU. Now, he did say he didn't have the same fire coming into the league because of injuries, and again, we mentioned his injuries last year, so the first thing for Arden Key is he has to stay healthy. If he gets hurt, I believe he could be gone, because again, Gruden doesn't have patience for guys who are in the training room or just can't perform. So that's the first thing. Now, if he makes the cut, which I think he will make the cut, he's got to make an impact in that rotation role behind Cleveland Farrell, Carl DeCieve, and of course Max Crosby. So of course he's got to get out there. He's got to produce on the field so he can do all the talking. And we talked about with Derek Carr, we're probably going to get into that later, that you can talk a great game. You could talk, say all the right things at the mic and say, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that and I'm going to do things my way. But at the end of the day, it's a results-based business and you have to produce on the field. So again, I will say this, if the Raiders bring in a guy like Jadeveon Clowney, Everson Griffin, or Clay Matthews, and I know Key mentioned, we don't need those guys. And in Tashaun Reed's piece, Key's like, we don't need those guys. We got who we need right now. Those guys that we have in the room right now can rush the passer. And I say that because, of course, Key doesn't want Jadeveon Clowney, Clay Matthews, or Everson Griffin joining the Raiders, because that would probably mean Key is going to get cut. Because that means the Raiders will have their four pass rushers right there, and then Key is the odd man out. So, of course, Key doesn't want another guy coming in. But if the Raiders don't, I feel like he has a chance to finally carve out a rotational role and just have an impact in the pass rush. Now, again, with Maurice Hurst, I think it's more the coaches have more want him to be more consistent. Again, he has his flashes. He gets to the quarterback. He can stop the run. As a rotational player, I think he can make an impact. I think he'll be, again, much better with Rod Marinelli coming in. So I'm not worried about Maurice Hurst. Some people do get a little antsy about him because sometimes the coaches kind of forget about him. They don't talk about him because all the talk is about Malik Collins right now. But I think Maurice Harris is going to have a pretty good year along with Jonathan Hankins on the inside.
Yeah, when I read that Arden Key says we don't need Jadeveon Clowney, I almost spit my coffee out reading that. I agree with you. You know, that's more about him fearing for his own roster spot than anything. But yeah, I think it was a little crazy. But anyhow, let's move on to another roster move that occurred this week. Linebacker Markell Lee, he was also waived after failing his physical as he was trying to return from off-season ankle surgery. And, you know, I follow him on, you know, social media and whatnot, and it's crazy that he didn't pass his physical because everything that I saw, he was working out just fine. And you know, I don't know what goes into these physicals or whatnot, but obviously just wasn't quite there yet. And I also want to point out Lee was drafted in 2017, and that leaves David Sharp as the last man standing from that class, which is kind of funny when you think about how he was actually let go at one point, and then they brought him back last season. But anyhow, Lee, he made his presence felt more as a special teamer. He was an okay linebacker against the run and definitely had his limits in pass coverage. But Mo, what I think we are seeing here is a philosophical shift in thinking here, finally, by the Raiders, you know, with their linebackers. For years and years, they have been behind the times when it comes to finding, you know, a modern day linebacker that can run, that can cover. But now it seems that they have kind of caught up with the rest of the league and now value guys that have that ability to defend the pass, you know, more of a mold of that hybrid safety linebacker. And those of you who heard John Gruden's press conference today, he actually spoke about the linebackers and you know, how he feels that they're, you know, have a pretty good situation there.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was one of my biggest criticisms of the McKenzie regime. And I guess it goes back to his roots in Green Bay. He really didn't value the linebacker. Remember, Markell Lee was drafted at a time they absolutely needed a middle linebacker to step up and be able to cover in the middle of the field, you know, especially with Kelsey in the division. And they come up with Markell Lee, whose limitations were pass coverage. And he just never developed in that area. Last year, I believe, when Paul Gunther wanted him to be able to stay on the field for all three downs, he lost weight, dropped a lot of weight, came back. He was in shape, but he, again, just because you're, and I think a lot of people don't understand this, just because you're athletic and just because you're under 240 pounds and you're quick and you're fast doesn't mean you're good in pass coverage. That's a skill like anything else that has to be developed, and Markell Lee just never had it. So I didn't see, in my predictions, I actually had the Raiders cutting PJ Hall as well as Markell Lee for that reason, that Markell Lee can't cover. So I'm not surprised. I'm kind of surprised that he was cut after being, I believe, on the unable to perform list of PUP. You said you followed him on social media. It seemed like he was in shape, so something went into that physical, obviously, that didn't pass the eye test. But as far as the Raiders linebacker core, and I had this under my depth chart projections, I think all their linebackers, when it's all said and done, will either be playing on special teams or will have a background in coverage. And what I mean by that is, if you look at the guys they have now, Corey Littleton has led the league in pass breakups with 22 since 2018. Nick Kwiatkowski was a high school safety. Nicholas Morrow was a safety at Greenville in D3 school in college before he came to the NFL. Tanner Muse moved around the Clemson defense, also played safety and linebacker. Javon White played safety at UNLV. So these guys have some history playing safety. And, of course, at safety, you have to do some coverage duty. So I think the shift in the linebacker course with the Raiders is indicative of the times. And, again, that was one of my criticisms, that the Raiders are just rolling out a 1980s defense. You can't do that now. You got tight ends in the middle of the field who can bust coverage. You got running backs who can catch out of the backfield. So you have to have linebackers who can cover in space. And the Raiders did not have that last year. And, again, it drove me nuts last year, especially – but Tahir Whitehead being able to play each position. But again, he was a guy who couldn't cover a mattress. So shout out to Tahir Whitehead, great guy, but again, could not cover. So Raiders had to update their linebacker corps, and I believe they did that. And the guys they have on the roster right now, and as you mentioned, Javon White gets some praise from John Gruden. I think he's going to make it. Something that went unreported, Ukemi Eligwe opted out of the season. He was a backup linebacker, former special teamer of the Kansas City Chiefs, who joined the Raiders. He opted out of the season. That's depth at the linebacker position. So I think Javon White has a potential to make the roster. Now, the Raiders did sign, and I believe Vincent Bonsignore said that the Raiders did sign Bryce Hager, who's a former Rams special teamer and a linebacker. I think even with him joining the roster, I think Javon White has a good position to I wouldn't say inside track, but he has a good chance to make the 53-man roster. Again, it is still a 53-man roster, which goes up to 55 only on game days.
Yeah, and Javon White was one of the guys that Gruden specifically talked about today in his press conference. But Mo, even with the upgrades of Littleton and Kwiatkowski and the change in kind of philosophy here with getting linebacker or having linebackers that can cover, I still contend, and I've been saying this for a while now, that I believe there's an issue with depth. And some people may argue that, yes, we know the Raiders are their base defense is a 4-3, but NFL teams today spend a much larger percentage of their time in the nickel with only two linebackers. So I get all of that. But when you think about the injury factor, what happened last year with the Raiders linebackers, you know, you had all kinds of injuries, the Vontaze Burfict suspension situation. We saw what happened when a guy like Nicholas Morrow kind of got tossed in there, maybe to play more snaps than what Paul Gunther would have liked. He was exposed last year, and he's a guy that is known for his athleticism and you know, his coverage skills, his ability to kind of match up, but he was picked apart at times. I specifically remember, I'm pretty sure it was the Green Bay game, Aaron Rodgers, I think two different times, he was picked on Morrow and completed touchdowns. So, you know, I do worry about that if the injury bug should hit, and God forbid that happens. But if it ever does, you know, you could see a situation where you're forced to play a guy like Tanner Muse or a guy like Javon White should he make the team. And to me, you just don't know what you have right now in those guys. I mean, are they ready for the big time? And I know there's a lot of hype behind Javon White, and I'll be honest, I don't know a whole lot about him. I've heard you speak a lot about him, but you know, he did go undrafted. So I mean, can you rely on him to step in and play meaningful snaps right away?
See, and this is what training camp is about, because the Raiders are going to find out if they can, and they'll see a lot more than we can, because of course, we're not allowed, media isn't allowed. I believe media can see training camp, but it's not open to the public. But the Raiders will find out if Javon and Tanner Muse can handle the position. I'm sure if they feel like they can't, they will bring in a veteran. Don't be surprised if that happens before the season. Now, I will say this, you drafted Tanner Muse in the third round. I know Mayock said he's going to first be a special teamer, but if you draft a guy in the third round, you kind of want him to be equipped to play if he has to, if you're drafting him on day two of the draft. So the other thing that I want to talk about is Jonathan Abram. I know Vic Tafer mentioned this, that if there's a situation where the Raiders have a problem with depth at linebacker, they can always move a safety into the box, and Jonathan Abram is a prime candidate for that because he's able to hit. He can thump. Pass coverage isn't his strong suit, but he can handle his own inside the box. I know he's supposed to be a starting safety next to Damaris Randall, but the Raiders now have some depth at safety. They signed Jeff Heath. Of course, Eric Harris is there, so they can move one of their safeties into the box should one of their linebackers go down, especially in the nickel package, to kind of cover up for that position. So, again, the game has changed where you don't necessarily need a big thumping two-down linebacker down there in the front seven. You can slide a safety down if he's able to handle his own in the box. And, again, the Raiders have some guys who can do that.
Yeah, that's a good point you make there. And I didn't hear that about the possibility of, you know, moving Abram around, but it does make a lot of sense. And to your point about where they selected a guy like Tanner Muse and how they've said all along that the plan is to kind of slowly bring him along as far as the linebacker goes, and his primary role will be as a special teamer, I remember them saying very similar things about Max Crosby last year when they selected him in the fourth round, saying, oh, he needs to kind of fill out and add strength and get bigger. And so I think the plan initially with him was to kind of slowly bring him along as well. And, you know, then he bursts onto the scene and is their best defensive player, really. So you never know. Sometimes these guys surprise, and maybe a guy like White or Muse jumps onto the scene and does step in there and plays well. So it's something we all, you know, we'll have to wait and see on that. But before we get to our first break here, Mo, of course, we can't have a podcast without talking about Derek Carr. I mean, you got to do it, right? So we're going to get to that part of the show right now. And you know, again, he was a big topic. If you follow any Raiders news site, radio show, podcast, it was all about Derek Carr this week. He spoke to the media and he was asked about a lot of things and he had a lot of things to say. Again, that was the big storyline that dominated the conversation. His comments about feeling he and his teammates are disrespected and his motivation this year to go out and prove people wrong and change that narrative. Now, Mo, he talked a lot about not caring anymore, right? We heard him talk about that. He doesn't care what people say about him and whether it's good or bad. And he continued on to talk about where his teammates were ranked in the top 100 and Madden ratings. So maybe it's just me, but I'm pretty sure you agree with me. Doesn't he sound a lot like a guy who does care about what people are saying about him and his teammates?
Absolutely. And I said this at the minute this happened, and people were like, yeah, I know Scott is all on Derek Carr because he likes the fire Derek Carr shows, which is cool. And I said, look, Derek Carr's issue has never been his motivation, his fire.
Mo, excuse me, Mo, one second. I'm sorry to interrupt. But we hear this from Carr a lot. You know, don't we always hear about the Carr kind of talking about, you know, his passion and his desire? I mean, that only takes it so far. But go ahead. Finish.
You're right. And that's not the issue. I will never question Carr's passion for the game. I will never call him soft. This is a guy who bounced back off of a back injury within a week, I believe. He snapped his pinky, still went out there, started throwing touchdowns. I believe the Carolina game, everyone remembers. I won't call Derek Carr soft. I won't question his desire to play the game. I won't question his passion, his want to, none of that stuff. The question is the results. Now, getting back to his presser, the point you just made is what I've been saying all along, and I kind of went off when I went on Raider Nation Network with Scott at 9:20 a.m., and I said this. I said, in the span of, 30 seconds, how can you say, I don't care, and then start citing the NFL Top 100 and Madden ratings and saying, I feel disrespected? Now, who's disrespecting you? Unless it's someone inside the organization, you obviously heard something outside the organization that you felt disrespected by. Was it the being ranked 20th by The Athletic in those quarterback tiers? Was it something you heard in the media? Because again, unless someone's inside the building saying you're not good enough, where is he hearing this disrespect from? It's from the outside. So obviously he cares enough to speak about it. And I say that's fine. As long as he doesn't allow that to affect his game negatively, where he's afraid to make plays on game day, fine, I'm all for it. You feel disrespected, use that as fuel to play a lot better. I don't have a problem with him hearing the noise and caring, but just own it. Own it and say, yeah, I do care. I hear all the chirping. I hear all the noise. I hear all the negativity. I hear the criticism. I hear what you're saying. And you know what? I'm going to prove all of you wrong. If he had come out and said that, I would have said, you know what? I can respect that. Fine. Now let's see the results. But you can't get up in the podium and say, I don't care, and then start talking about all the outside noise that you've heard. It just doesn't, there's no correlation there.
Yeah, I agree with you. If he can, you know, if he can take that criticism and that disrespect, and that can motivate him to go out and play great football, then great, use it. But please, don't sit here and tell us, like you said, don't sit here and tell us that you don't care, you know, about the outside noise, but we all know that it really does. And he's very well aware of what's being said out there. And I don't care what he says. And I don't know if anyone else picked up on this. I actually texted you about this. And did you hear the part where Josh Dubois, and of course everyone, I'm pretty sure most of us follow Josh Dubois, and really he's known as a car hater out there, I suppose, right? You could say, because on Twitter, you know, he puts up all those stats that kind of doesn't show car in the greatest light, I guess you could say. Some very negative statistics, I guess you could say, about Carr. But did you hear when Josh asked his first question, Carr kind of really passively aggressively gives him the, oh, hello, Josh, you know, always good to see you, Josh. You know, so to me, that tells you right there that, you know, he's well aware. He knows that Dubois out there kind of trashing him, and that type of stuff really bothers him.
Yeah, shout out to Josh Dubois, by the way. Guy's a statistician. Ken, don't, if you need a stat for anything, just ask Josh. But I actually like the fact that he was able to kid around with Josh that way, because we all, as you said, Josh doesn't show Carr in the greatest light with his stats. And I guess Carr hasn't blocked him. I don't know. I don't think so. But the fact that he can see Josh and just not be, of course, he had a little passive aggressive greeting there, but the fact that he just didn't go off on him, fine. You know, he understands. I think Carr understands that he has to play better. And that's something that he said during his press conference. And this is the one thing I don't get about Carr supporters, right? You can get on Twitter and say, well, Carr needs to play better. And Carr acknowledges that he needs to play better. I think Carr will play better. Let me make that clear to people listening. I think Carr is going to have a good season, people. I really do. I really think he's going to have one of his best seasons this year. He's in the third year. He's got the weapons around him. He's familiar with the system. So he should have, he has the tools and resources to have a good season. I think he will. Now, he even said it himself that he needs to do more. He needs to be better. Now, if you say that on Twitter, if you say, look, I think Carr needs to do better. I think he needs to be better in the red zone. I think he needs to beat the Kansas City Chiefs. I think he needs to play better in cold weather. You know, I think he needs to stand in the pocket a little longer and deliver some throws. I think he needs to scramble a little more. If you say those things, people say, oh, you think he's trash. And it's like, whoa. I'm just saying, look, he's a decent starting level quarterback, but I think he has the potential to be better. And we saw that from him. And I know a lot of people like to cite 2016, but I even like his 2015 season. He had a lot of bright spots in that year. And I think we saw what Carr can be at his best under Bill Musgrave. And we just haven't seen that over the last couple of or few years. Now, he has taken steps in the right direction. But again, I just say Carr can be better in this area, A, B, C, D. And then people just automatically assume, oh, you hate Carr. Because I think, just because I think he could be better is, oh, you hate Carr. If I don't praise Carr for every little thing that he does, you hate him. And it's not that. It's, my point is, if the Raiders were to settle for what Carr is right now, chances are they are not going to a Super Bowl with that. Not with Patrick Mahomes in the division. You cannot go to the Super Bowl if you're the Raiders with what Carr is right now. He has to step it up. And again, I think he will with the weapons he has. He has the offensive line. He has the running back. He has depth at wide receiver. He has explosive wide receiver in Ruggs. Again, third year in the system for the first time in his career. He has all the resources to play well. I think he will. But it is not a crime to say, yes, Carr is okay. He's decent, but he can be better.
I agree with you with everything you said there, and I do think that the fan base has a difficult time understanding that you can be critical of a player. You can say that a player needs to do better, you want to see them improve in this area, and still be a fan of that player. Like I get a lot of heat myself from people on Twitter when I may say something critical of Carr. They'll assume that, oh, you don't like him. Well, no, that's not the case at all. In fact, I was as big a Carr fan as there was, early in his career. But I'm still a Carr fan. I shouldn't have said that. I'm still a Carr fan. But the last couple seasons, I've just become more critical of him because I just feel, as you said, he's not doing enough. And so what I want to do here, Mo, is I think this will be a little fun for us here. I want to try to have a little debate with you here. And of course, this is if you feel differently. But if you agree with me, that's fine as well. But obviously, the topic is Carr. And I got into this discussion on Twitter, and it kind of got me thinking, so I thought we could do this little exercise here. I know there's differing opinions out there whether or not quarterbacks should be judged on wins and losses. And ultimately, I believe, it's my opinion, that they should be, to some degree, I'm not saying it's the only evaluation tool you should use when you look at quarterbacks, and I'm not saying that wins and losses is a quarterback stat. I understand that it's a team stat, as well as a head coach stat, but obviously, you know, it is one of the things that we should be considering when we evaluate the quarterback. I understand the quarterback isn't responsible for what the defense does, but at the same time, I believe the quarterback, it's the most important position, not only in football, Mo, I think it's the most important position in all of pro sports. They get paid more money than any position on the field in football. And in this league, in the NFL, you either have a quarterback or you don't. And at the end of the day, when you look at Derek Carr's win-loss record, 39-55 as a starter, 4-33 against playoff teams, and I'm going to point this out as well, 0-5 at Arrowhead. 0-5 at Arrowhead. Now, I'm not going to say it's all on him. That would be unfair. But he talked about disrespect. If you want respect, the first place you should be looking is right there with that win-loss record. And if you want to be talked about as one of the better quarterbacks in the league, like he was in 2016, then again, that's where you start. Start with that win-loss record.
Yeah, absolutely. And I will say this, okay? While the win-loss record is a team stat, I just want to put that out there as a pre-context. It is a team stat. But usually your win-loss record is indicative of your I wouldn't say usually, but a lot of times it is indicative of your quarterback position. Usually, if you have an A-plus quarterback, you're going to be at least 500. You're going to at least have a chance to make the playoffs. And, of course, as we all know, the Raiders haven't had a lot of those chances in the past few years with Carr under center. Now, you mentioned at Arrowhead his record 0-5 there. You mentioned his record against winning teams, and I get all of that. But you also – and this is what's going to make me sound like a Carr apologist – but you also have to factor in what he's been surrounded by. Now, he hasn't had, and a lot of people made this point to me on Twitter, and I do agree with them, but I do feel like Derek Carr has overcome this eventually if he wants to be successful. Hasn't had even a decent defense, except for 1 year in 2016. You saw what happened when the Raiders' defense, of course, they gave up a lot of points and yards, but they had the most turnover takeaways, I believe, or they were tied for first with Kansas City Chiefs in that category. But when their defense generated turnovers, I gave that offense more possessions. Carr delivered. The coaching situation, how good of a coach would you say Del Rio was, or his first head coaching situation there, Dennis Allen? You know, how good was his coaching situation? Not very good to mediocre. How was the GM? How was the drafting? We just talked about David Sharp is the last 2017 draftee on that team. That means they cut the first, second, and third round guys. And we all know that McKenzie's draft history is a bit shaky if you look at it. Now, he had 2014, which is a knockout of the park, but if you look at the totality, and I've defended McKenzie in the past, if you look at the totality of McKenzie's drafts, not all that great. So sometimes, and a lot of people say this, and I totally agree, sometimes it matters where a quarterback ends up, right? So if Derek Carr goes to, I don't know, New England, Kansas City, Buffalo, do you think he would have been more of a winner with those teams, considering their situations right now? I know Buffalo wasn't that good before, but with Sean McDermott, pretty good in their current GM. If he's in a better situation, better coaching, better defense, better team that better drafts. Let's say he winds up with the New Orleans Saints. You know, if Drew Brees wasn't there, I believe we would talk about Carr in a different light. Now, again, eventually, if he wants to be looked at respectfully as a top tier quarterback, he's got to be able to overcome all of that. Fair or not, life isn't fair. We all know that. Sometimes we're dealt bad hands and we have to overcome things, and that's what he's going to have to do. But again, when you look at his situation, and I know a lot of Raider fans don't want to admit to this, but the Raiders situation has been chaotic. Some people would downright call it dysfunctional. So how can you put a player in a dysfunctional situation and expect him to reach his utmost potential? He's going to have a cap on the ceiling. You can compare it to, I know we shouldn't compare sports to the workplace, but if you're a good worker, you go to workplace and your boss is just not good with the employees. Everything is out of whack. You know, the people around you aren't working well. The people above you don't know what they're doing. you know, what's that going to do to your performance? You know, it's going to limit you a little bit. So you have to factor that in, that Carr's situation hasn't been ideal. But I get at some point you have to be able to overcome the non-ideal situations and deliver. And again, with the Raiders, what they are right now, I believe Mayock's done a good job with drafting. Again, Gruden, I have my issues with Gruden's play calling, but I wouldn't say he's a bottom play caller. I would say he's okay, but he needs to straighten it up in the second half. So we know that. The defense has to step up. I'm still concerned about the defense, but again, that should not be an excuse. Now, if you want to be looked at as a top quarterback, you got to be able to overcome something, because you're not going to have the perfect situation.
You know, those are all very good points to make there, Mo. And I think the best argument that you could make in defending Carr, to me anyways, is the coaching turnover that you mentioned. I mean, the number of head coaches that he's had to deal with and offensive coordinators, that is a major factor. And I think it really has maybe kind of stunted some of his development, especially since the end of the 2016 season. And I think that's got to be very difficult for any player to overcome. But I think I have a good argument against that. Okay, hear me out here. And I knew you would come prepared, so I made sure I did my homework as well. But now, when I think about great quarterbacks versus an average quarterback in the league, and I think Carr falls into he's an average quarterback. He's not great. I think some, as we call them, stands, I think they believe he's, you know, a big time elite quarterback, and I just don't see it that way. When I think about great quarterbacks in the league, I think about guys that elevate the play of everyone around them. And I know that people might say, oh, well, he, you know, look what Darren Waller did last year. And okay, you know, maybe that's true. But I think I often like to use the example of a guy like Russell Wilson. And I know that people are going to tell me that over the years he's benefited from a strong defense, and that is true. But that was not the case last year. Go back and look at what Seattle did last year for a second. And I got the numbers right here, okay? Defensively, they ranked 22nd in the league. They gave up 25 points a game defensively. 26th in yards allowed. So, and I think it's fair to say that offensively, they don't have the greatest supporting cast. I can't think of Lockett. You know, Lockett is a decent receiver. I mean, I think he went for 1,000 yards with the Seahawks, and they brought in Metcalf as a rookie last year. But I don't think that's an unbelievable cast. They went 11-5, Mo, in a very competitive division, made the playoffs, and won a playoff game. Okay, so there's my first example. Now my second example is Deshaun Watson in Houston. Another defense that was so-so. They ranked 19th in points allowed at 24 points a game and 28th in yards allowed. Okay, so the defense was not very good. And outside of DeAndre Hopkins, who's elite, don't get me wrong, he's a top three receiver in the league, but is there anyone else on that offense that scares you? Because I can't think of anybody. They finished 10-6. They made the playoffs. They won a game in the playoffs as well. And had the Chiefs up against the ropes, if it wasn't for Bill O'Brien and some bonehead questionable calls, that game could have looked a little bit different. And I'm not done yet, Mo. I've got one more for you, okay? Carson Wentz in Philly, okay? They had all kinds of injuries to that roster last year. Offensively, defensively, Deshaun Jackson went down early in the season. Alshon Jeffries, he was down. Ertz battled some injuries down the stretch. Wentz also was thrown to practice squad guys. I mean, how many people heard of, Greg Ward? Greg Ward. I mean, guys you never heard of. That's who he was throwing the ball to down the stretch. And what did the Eagles do in the final four games of their season when their backs were up against the wall? They started 5-7, okay? They went on to win four straight games. They snuck into the playoffs. Yes, the division stinks, don't get me wrong. But they were led by Carson Wentz. He, in that time period, that four-game win streak, he averaged 300 yards passing, 7 touchdowns, and zero interceptions in that span. Now, in contrast, okay, you look at what the Raiders, okay, their last few games in Carr. They started 6-4, great start, way ahead of expectations. They went on to lose 5 of the final 6 games to end with a 7-9 record, finished 3rd place in the division. So to me, that's the big difference right there. When I'm talking about quarterbacks who make players better, make the team better, That's what I'm talking about. These are those three guys right there. They will their teams to win, and I just have not seen that enough from Carr.
Yeah, you're preaching to the choir on that one. The argument you made with Carson Wentz and what he did last year, I made the same argument today on Twitter to someone. Someone asked me, have you had an example of a quarterback who had the same situation as Carr and got it done, quote unquote? And I cited the same thing that you said about Carson Wentz. I said, go back to last year. Carson Wentz did it with a Greg Ward Jr., who was a quarterback on the collegiate level as his top wide receiver. So I'm with you on that one. And you use Russell Wilson and you use Deshaun Watson as examples. To me, those guys are above average quarterbacks. I would rate those guys ahead of Derek Carr on the quarterback tier. So I'm with you on that. I have no issues with the arguments that you just laid out. I have those guys ahead of Carr on my quarterback tier system. But with Carr being an average quarterback, right now, the way he's playing right now, he cannot overcome certain things. Terrible defense. Now, I will say the one I'm going to put on my Carr apologist hat on right now and say what I will say, though, is those guys have had more stability than Derek Carr. Bill O'Brien's been around. Doug Peterson is known as one of the best play callers around. And again, Russell Wilson hasn't had the best situation. But you know what? He's arguably one of the top quarterbacks in the league right now, not named Patrick Mahomes. So to compare him to Russell Wilson, to me, it's like night and day. We all know Russell Wilson's on another level. So I wouldn't even compare Carr to him. But what I will say about Carr and his situation is that he's dealt with multiple years of dysfunction. And I think bringing in Mike Mayock and having Gruden there, this is the first bit of stability he's had. So this is why I've been patient with Carr. Again, I had my Carr apologist hat on right now. This is why I've been patient with Carr, because he's dealt with so much dysfunction early in his career. Now he's getting a taste of some stability and continuity. I want to see where that leads him. I know that people are saying, well, year seven, he is what he is at this point. But let's see what he does with that continuity and that stability that he didn't have early in his career. Now, if he plateaus and he's the same player he's been, then okay, I will say it doesn't matter. Stability or not, he is who he is. He's an average QB. But we did see him improve from 2018 to 2019. Now, again, 2019, decent season, not great, average, did a lot with a little bit. Now let's see what he does with a full deck at wide receiver, with Darren Waller in his second year, with Josh Jacobs in his second year, with all the tools he has around. I'm patient. It's year seven, but I want to see what he does. I know we've said this last year, and we probably said this so many times. This is it. This is the make or break year. This is where we find out what is Derek Carr. Is he trending upward or is he plateauing? Because, again, he has the tools. We'll find out. But, again, your arguments are all valid. But I will say, once you start in dysfunction, it could be a different story once you have some stability. And, again, we'll see what that leads to.
Yeah, absolutely, Mo. And it's a topic that we could go on for hours. We could go all night here with this topic. But unfortunately, Mo, listen, we're up against it here. We've been talking for a long time here. We got to get to our first break. But don't go anywhere, because when we return here on Just Pod Baby, Mo is going to break out his crystal ball and make some training camp position battle predictions here for you. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. And we are back here on Just Pod Baby with Evan Grote and your guest co-host, Mo Moten. What I want to do this segment here, Mo, is break out the crystal ball and have you make some predictions on who you think will win some of these key training camp positional battles that are going to happen here in camp. I've even come up with a nice witty name for it here. I'm calling it Prediction Time with Mostradamus. How do you like that?
I like that pretty well. I would have a little, like, some black sunglasses and a nice weird hat to put on. If people could see me, it would be pretty sweet.
Now, you actually wrote about this over at Just Blog Baby this week, so go over there, guys. Go check it out. It's a good article. You touched on a lot of different positions that you feel are going to be competitive. And let's start with the starting cornerback job opposite of Trayvon Mullen, because we know he's locked into the QB cornerback one spot, excuse me. It's a big question mark right now, and it's probably the number one battle that fans are going to focus on this summer. And to me, it comes down to it's a three-horse race. I think you've got the veteran Prince Amukamara, second-year man Isaiah Johnson, and rookie Damon Arnett. But when you look into your crystal ball, Mostradamus, what do you see?
Yeah, definitely going with Prince Amukamara. Again, I watched him a lot with the Giants. Pretty good press corner, fits into Paul Gunther's system. So I think he's the guy who's going to start the season in the starting position opposite Trayvon Mullen. They don't have to rush Damon Arnett into the starting lineup. I know a lot of fans are anxious to see him because he's a first-rounder. But again, you don't want to put a guy on the field before he's ready. The Raiders have to play the Saints in the second week. So against Drew Brees, again, you don't want him exposed. But I think Prince Amukamara is going to start out position opposite Mullen. I will say one dark horse I do like that probably won't happen, but it's just a guy to keep an eye on. Keyshawn Nixon had a pretty good preseason last year. I think he can slide in there possibly. There's an injury or two. You know, one guy isn't ready. Arnett isn't ready. Maybe Keyshawn Nixon slips in there. You never know. I think he's a real dark horse to watch out for.
Yeah, I heard you talking about Nixon when you were on with Scott and Q this week, and I'm going to get to my dark horse in just a minute. But, you know, you talked about, and we touched on this a bit last week when we discussed the rookies probably going to need a little extra time to get up to speed without having the offseason program. And there's, of course, there's a reason why they brought in a guy like Amukamara. He's a veteran in this league. He's got 99 starts under his belt, and he fits the profile of what Gunther looks for in his corners, you know, being a press man guy. So I do agree with you that if I was a betting man, I think the smart money would be on Amukamara. And ideally, the plan would be for Arnett to eventually take over at some point. They did invest a first-round pick in him, so they do want to see him take over at some point. But my dark horse pick that I want to talk about, and I've been saying it for quite a while now on this podcast and when I've been guests on other shows and whatnot, I say Isaiah Johnson. And the reason I feel that way is because last year during training camp, there were a couple of guys who, if you follow the beat writers on Twitter, you know, they kind of are letting you know what's going on in camp. They let you know who's making plays and whatnot, standing out. There was two guys that I recall specifically. Darren Waller was one, and Isaiah Johnson was another guy who early in camp, you kept hearing his name come up. And I remember Gruden speaking highly of him as well, and he really built himself some momentum. And then he had that freak accident. He had the facial fracture. I guess it's not a freak accident. You're playing football, but the concussion with the facial fracture in the first week of preseason, and it all kind of went off the rails for him. He landed on an IR, eventually came off, but at that point it was late in the season, and it was kind of a lost year for him. And Mike Mayock spoke about him during the offseason in a conference call. And he spoke very highly of Johnson, referred to him, and this was a quote, as a guy we cannot wait to see on the field. And now he's been a guest on my show, so maybe I'm a little biased, but that's pretty, you know, he's a guy that I think has a leg up over a guy like Arnett because he has a little bit more experience in the system. And when I interviewed him, I just loved his attitude, and he understands the opportunity that's in front of him. And in addition to his great speed that he has and his length, one of the things that he talked about was his competitive nature. So I really expect him to make this competition an interesting one.
Yeah, I heard a lot of buzz about Isaiah Johnson last year, too. He had an unfortunate injury, as you mentioned, during the preseason. He's kind of a new quarterback. He played wide receiver for a bit at Houston. He's got great intangibles, though. He's 6'2", 210, and he's quick, he's long, he's got the length there. So I could see why a lot of coaches and a lot of fans will like him as a dark horse coming up in that secondary. My only thing is sometimes Gruden will hype guys up and we get excited. And then we just wind up being disappointed because he'll trade or release the guy. I'm not saying he's going to trade or release Isaiah Johnson, but sometimes Gruden has a way of hyping up guys, and I don't want to say they don't live up to the hype, but then you wonder what happened to that guy. Why wasn't that guy playing more? What happened? Why is he on the field? So a little cautious when Gruden says something. I know the B-Rise also mentioned Isaiah Johnson, but with his intangible 6'2", 210, and ability to recognize routes as a former wide receiver, I would say he has a pretty decent chance of being a dark horse. So I like that pick.
Now, the next battle that we're going to keep our eye on is at the wide receiver position, in particular the last couple of spots. And I think it's safe to say we know that Tyrell Williams, Hunter Renfro, the rookies Brian Edwards and Hunter Henry Ruggs, excuse me, they're locks. Those are four guys right there that we know are going to be on the team. So let's assume the plan is to go with six wide receivers. That leaves two spots open, and there's at least seven guys that are going to be competing for those spots. So what's your crystal ball telling you on this one?
Got to go with Zay Jones, who was there last year, didn't contribute much, but he was working out in those unofficial practices with Derek Carr in Vegas. So I like his attitude coming into this season. He seems locked in. And also Nelson Aguilar, he can help out on special teams. He can line up inside, he can line up outside. And I tweeted this today. Gruden likes wide receivers who can play all three wide receiver positions. Mayock talked about it at the combine as well. And Nelson Aguilar fits that mold. Again, he can play in the slot, he can play on the outside. So I think he has an inside track to a job. I know a lot of Raider fans are going to yell at me, Rico Gafford. But, I mean, when Rico Gafford played within a depleted wide receiver corps, he really didn't do much. I know he had two catches, 66 yards, and a touchdown on an open catch. But if he didn't do much on a depleted wide receiver corps, I don't see him making it with a lot more depth at the position, especially with two guys who are early-round picks. Zay Jones was picked in the second round by the Bills. Nelson Aguilar picked in the first round by the Philadelphia Eagles, I believe 2015, out of USC. I think Gruden sees those two guys as high-potential guys, and he wants to tap into their production.
Yeah, I think at least when you talk about a guy like Rico Gafford, you know, when you're comparing him to a guy like Keelan Doss, who is also going to be fighting for a spot, at least you look at Gafford and you say, well, he does one thing really well, and it's one thing that you know that Gruden likes, and that's speed. So he could certainly make a case for that, but I do agree with you there. And while we're on the topic of wide receivers, there was a lot of chatter this week about Brian Edwards. If you listen to any of the press conferences this week, Greg Olson, Carr, and even Gruden today in his press conference talked a lot about Edwards, and it sounds like he's been very, very impressive. As impressive as you can be in a walkthrough situation when you're wearing t-shirt and shorts, but it sounds like he's moving well. He's fully recovered from the injury that he had during college. And with all the talk about his size and his speed and his ability to make contested catches, the 50-50 balls, Carr talked a lot about that. When you think about the struggles that the Raiders had in the red zone last year, I think Edwards could come in and make his biggest impact this year as a threat in the red zone. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I initially thought that Edwards would have to wait until 2021, basically until the Raiders part ways with Tyrell Williams, him to take over that X wide receiver position. But as you just said, all the talk about him seems like he's going to get some playing time, a decent amount of playing time, decent amount of snaps this year. And I pretty much mapped it out and made sense of it. I know Greg Olson spoke today and he said that they're going to move Ruggs to the slot, not permanently, but he's going to get some snaps in the slot, which means, again, he'll be moved around because, again, Gruden wants his wide receivers to know all three wide receiver positions. So people who are sounding the alarm bells for Hunter Renfro is still going to be involved in the offense, but I think there will be times where you'll see Henry Ruggs in the slot, Hunter Renfro will be on the sideline, and Brian Edwards will be on the outside opposite Tyrell Williams. So you'll have Edwards, Williams, and Ruggs. So I think you can go four deep at the wide receiver position, which, again, is good news for Derek Carr, who's going to have all these great weapons. But you're going to have four wide receivers deep with the Raiders offense. You can take out Hunter Renfro and put in Edwards and shift them outside. You can have Renfro win for third downs or clutch situations, and you can move Ruggs around from inside out. And I think that's a good thing. But Edwards being, I think he's right now the star of training camp. Of course, no pads, but I think they're just excited the fact that he recovered from his foot injury. And again, he would have been probably a possible second round pick. Some people because he might have been a first-round pick if he didn't get hurt. So for the Raiders to snag a first-round pick in Ruggs and a guy who may have been a first-round pick, early second-round pick in Edwards, it's a great move for the Raiders and Mayock. So I'm excited to see what that wide receiver group is going to look like this year.
Me too. No shortage of talent on the roster at wide receiver this year. And the final training camp position battle that I want to ask you about is along the defensive line. We talked about PJ Hall and how he was released, and we touched on Maurice Hurst earlier in the show here. Right now, there's three guys locked in. You got Hankins, Hurst, and Malik Collins. That leaves only two other guys right now on the roster, if I'm correct. That's Daniel Ross, and there's an undrafted guy out of Michigan State, who I'm not even going to try to pronounce that last name, but undrafted rookie. Now, I'm going to assume Ross wins that job for the fourth defensive tackle spot, but is there a possibility that maybe the fourth defensive tackle is not on the roster right now, if Ross shouldn't be that guy?
Yeah, that's my prediction, that the fourth defensive tackle is not yet on the Raiders roster. I know a lot of people are penciling Daniel Ross in that position because he has experience, 2 years of experience under Rod Marinelli. That's the easy option. But he also has a lot to prove. He hasn't done much in 2 years. I know he's been a rotational guy. He's pretty much improving. He's played 16 games, 19 tackles, 2 sacks. Okay, maybe he has some potential to play the run and rush the passer. Gruden mentioned that in his presser today. But I wouldn't be so quick to pencil him into the fourth defensive tackle spot. I think the last spot comes from a veteran who's probably unsigned right now. And two guys I really like, Mike Daniels, former Green Bay Packer, former Detroit Lion. I know he's had some health issues, but if he's healthy right now, and I saw one of his workout videos, he looks great to me. But if he makes it into a camp, I think he can make a difference at the defensive tackle spot. A lot of fans like Timmy Jernigan. I believe he had some back injuries with a surgery, so I don't know about that. He signed a big contract. He got released. He was with the Ravens for a period with the Eagles also most recently. But I don't know about Timmy Jernigan because of his condition. Damon Harrison is a guy I like because he's a pure run stopper. He showed that he can get after the passer a little bit. I know he had some thoughts about retiring after last year when he was with the Detroit Lions. But when you're with the Detroit Lions and you're losing a lot of games, retirement comes into mind. Just ask Calvin Johnson about that one. But I like Damon Harrison as a guy that can come in, stop the run, and potentially rush the passer in the middle. He can be like a Jonathan Hankins, where he doesn't get a lot of attention because he's more of a run stuffer, but he's going to be critical to that defensive line if he's healthy and able to play. So I think the Raiders sign a veteran defensive tackle to come in and fill that last spot.
Well, there you have it, Mostradamus with his top training camp position battle predictions for you. And, of course, we're going to hold you to those predictions. We've got it all recorded, so we will make sure that we let you know how you did. But listen, Mo, we're up against the end of the show here. I think we've covered it all this week. There was a lot of news, but I think we touched on it all, and As always, I appreciate you joining me as co-host this week. I love chatting it up with you, and I know the listeners enjoy having you on as well and hearing all your thoughts. Do yourselves a favor. Go out and follow Mo on Twitter. That's at Mo Moten. Be sure to follow all his great work, whether it's at Beecher Report, with us at Silver and Black Today, or over at Just Blog Baby. He does a great job, and he's one of the hardest working guys out there, so support him, please. Mo, again, thank you very much.
Appreciate you having me on, Evan. Silver and Black Today, Raider Nation Network, Raiders fans, you wanted a station just Raiders. That is the place to go all day. All Raiders, you find me there probably in the near future. Evan will probably be over there probably in the near future doing segments. So a lot of good stuff as we prepare you for the 2020 season.
All right, we'll be right back here on Just Pod Baby. Okay, we're back here just to wrap this one up. Unfortunately, it is time to say goodbye for this week. Another episode in the books. I want to thank my co-host, Maurice Moten. Another great job. Love having you on the show with me. And do yourselves a favor. Make sure you're following Silver and Black Today on Raider Nation Radio, 920 a.m. every day, 2 to 4 p.m. Make sure you're checking out all the great content that's over at the website, silverandblacktoday.com. And also, make sure you subscribe to this podcast. Love your support. Hope everyone has a great week. And as always, just win, baby.